We are doing numbers. What do you guys know about numbers?
You mean from that I learned from reading the intro in my Bible this morning?
Sure.
But it's got a lot in it that we already did in Leviticus.
Okay, it does have some of the law that's repeated from Leviticus. Just wait till we get to Deuteronomy. It does have more stories in it.
Remember, I called you about it. Why were they doing the law again? And it was because you said it's for the new generation.
Right, that's going to be Deuteronomy, and after Numbers 26, some of the law is for the new generation. That is correct because it's law about the land. What else?
I think it picks up after Exodus because Leviticus is like just laws, so it picks up after the end of Exodus and kind of continues.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right. It's the wandering. What about you, Terry? What were you going to say? That you learned this morning reading the intro.
No, pretty much the same. It starts about a month after Exodus.
Uh-huh.
And it has, the reason is, oh, the numbers is the Greek word for it. The Hebrew title is actually like the first word or two.
Mm-hmm.
In
mm-hmm.
the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Yes.
That was interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, and it does, it's called numbers because it does have a lot of
census taking. Mm-hmm. Good. Anything else that we know about the book of Numbers?
It also says that the main theme is just learning how to be faithful to God.
Okay, that is one of the themes.
Like that. And, you know, and how obviously and God's faithfulness.
Yes.
To a very rebellious people.
Yes, God's faithfulness to a rebellious people.
To bring them from.
Yes, lots of patience from on God's behalf.
To bring them from their deliverance to the promised land.
Yes.
And it was interesting because after I read that in the notes, and I just prayed for my children. You know, Lord, I hope they're saved, and I hope that you know you will be faithful,
mm-hmm.
even in their rebellion, to bring them.
Right.
Right. Glory.
Right. Yeah. Very good. All right. So Numbers. Numbers takes place after Leviticus, obviously. But Leviticus, if you remember, do you remember how long Leviticus spans the time period? Yeah. No, it's like 1 month. But yes, it's very short. So we have Genesis. It's like thousands of years, right? We have Exodus. That's, well, I mean, depending on. I mean, that's quite a long time because you have their whole slavery 400 years, right? But then that's only about a year once they're out of Egypt. Okay, so maybe 401 years. And then Leviticus is 1 month, okay? And then Numbers picks up where basically where Exodus ended, and it takes place over 38 years, okay? The first 10 chapters are going to be about 20 days. And then the rest of the book is going to cover the 38 years of wandering because they've already had two. They're in their second year, so 38, 39, whatever, to make up their 40 years of wandering. Okay, so Exodus 40, verse 1, that's at the very, if you remember, is at the very end of Exodus when they're setting up the tabernacle. And that says the first day of the first month. And it's implied, if you read in context, it's the second year, right? Because they've already been at Sinai for about a year. Okay, they set up the tabernacle, and then Numbers 1:1 says it's the first day of the second month of the second year. So Exodus 40, first day, first month. Numbers 1, first day, second month.
I had a question about that.
Yes.
I did read a few chapters. When it said first day, second month,
yes.
Second year.
Yes.
Now, is that second year since they left, or second calendar year also?
Okay, because remember,
I don't remember,
remember they start their first month at Passover.
So,
so the first, yes,
Egypt.
Yeah, because God sets their time.
Okay.
So their first month is Passover month. Now, Passover isn't until the 14th of the month, but that month is then now their first month.
Okay.
So however the Egyptians reckon time, whatever, Israel now has their own calendar. And remember when we talked about it in Leviticus, they have like a whole bunch of New Years. Do you remember that? They have a whole bunch. So this is, but the way God reckoned it was that Passover was the first celebration of the new year.
Perfect.
Okay. So this is going to be the first day of the second month, the second year. So Passover, they leave Egypt. Right, they go to Sinai. They're there for almost, it's going to be about 11 months, Okay. And then now this is, we're in the first day of the second month. So it's been a year and a month since they left Egypt. And remember, they leave Egypt and then they go wandering in the wilderness a little bit. And then they have the whole Red Sea incident, you know, and then they actually have to make their way to Sinai. So it is a little bit of time. Okay, title, like Terry already said, Numbers comes from the Greek and the Latin. Okay, Greek is arithmor, which you can hear the arithmetic in it, A-R-I-T-H-M-O-R. And the Latin is numeri, which you can hear numbers or numerous or whatever in it, numeri. Okay? Arithmor, A-R-I-T-H-M-O-R. And then the Latin is numeri, N-U-M-E-R-I. Okay? And they probably titled it this because we're going to learn the book centers around two censuses. Okay? So it's probably from the two censuses that we get the book, the word numbers. Because you think there's a lot of numbers, and at the beginning there kind of are, but the rest of it, not really. So you have a census at the beginning, a census towards the end, and those are your numbers. Okay? The Hebrew title, there are actually two. Okay? If you remember, do we remember the Hebrew title of Genesis? No, Genesis? No? Okay, what was the Hebrew title of Exodus? No, no, that's how Genesis is structured. That's all right.
Nice try.
I know. I had a glimmer of some kind of memory at all. It flew in there and everything was gone.
Okay, the title is, okay, remember, the Hebrew titles come from the first words of the book. What are the first words of Genesis? In the beginning. That's the title of Genesis, in the beginning. Remember, what were you saying, Exodus? What's the title of Exodus?
Leaving.
Names. These are the names. That's how Exodus starts. These are the names. Okay, Leviticus. Which I don't even remember, which is a shame because we just did it. Okay.
Then the Lord summoned Moses.
Yes, so it's, and the Lord called is the name of the book in Leviticus. Okay? So if you look at Numbers now, how does Numbers start?
The Lord spoke.
The Lord spoke. So it's very similar to Leviticus. Leviticus and Numbers basically start the same way. So there is an older Hebrew title that is And God Spoke. Okay, which is appropriate because Numbers is God's continued revelation. Okay, and God reveals how to be holy and live a holy life. However, the most common Hebrew title is from, in the Hebrew, it's the fifth word. It's the wilderness. Because if you look at Numbers 1:1, it says, then the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. Okay, so wilderness is the most common Hebrew title.
Is your wilderness capitalized?
No.
Oh,
I don't know, but yeah. And wilderness is a very appropriate title for the book of Numbers because that's where they spend the whole book, in the wilderness, okay? Wandering. Okay, author and date. Okay, we go through this with each Pentateuch book. Who wrote Numbers?
Moses.
Okay, do we know when he wrote it? In the wilderness. Okay, most important date you should remember if you only ever remember one date in your Bible. Remember the date of the Exodus. What is the date?
1445.
Yes, or 46, but yes. 1445 or 46. Okay, so that means when would they have entered the land?
40 years later.
40 years later, which is? 14, you have to subtract, remember? No, I know. But remember, BC, you have to work backwards. So it's 1406 or 1405. They would have entered the land. So when do you think Leviticus was written? I'm going to do that. When do you think Numbers was written?
Shortly after that.
Well, during that whole time, maybe.
During that time, but the span of Numbers spans how many years?
40.
So when was it most likely, at least completed?
Near the end.
Okay, so 1405, 1406, it would have been completed. Who knows if he wrote, you know, because the beginning of it, they're still in Sinai.
And he doesn't die till the end of, or near the end of
Deuteronomy. He doesn't die till the end of Deuteronomy. And so Deuteronomy would have been written right before they entered the land. So that would have been 1405, 1406.
And that's right. He couldn't enter the land.
Yes, he couldn't. And we're going to learn that in Numbers. He can't enter the land. Okay?
So what was the year of Numbers?
1405 or 1406, he writes. At least it's completed. He might have worked on it throughout that time, but because it records events up until the end, up until right before they're ready to enter the land, it had to have been completed towards the end of that time. Okay? Mm-hmm. If we go to Numbers 33, can someone read for me Numbers 33, verse 1 and 2?
These are the journeys of the sons of Israel by which they came from the land of Egypt by their armies, under the leadership of Moses and Aaron. Moses recorded their starting place according to their journey by the command of the Lord. And these are their journeys according to their starting places.
Okay, so here, even in the book of Numbers, it says that Moses writes down, records their journeys through the wilderness. Okay, so most of the Pentateuch books do not have internal evidence that says Moses wrote this book. Okay, Numbers does. Okay, also, all throughout Numbers, we're going to have, then the Lord spoke to Moses, just like in Leviticus, right? Then the Lord, God sometimes speaks to others, but primarily he speaks through Moses, so it makes sense that he would be the one that writes it down. Okay, the New Testament also assumes that the Pentateuch was written by Moses. Do we need to go through this again? No? We're good? I can just list them really quick. John 5, 45 to 47, Jesus says it. He assumes that the Pentateuch is written by Moses. Acts 26, 22, and Romans 10, 5. Those are just three references of many in the Old Testament, New Testament, of assuming that the whole Pentateuch was written by Moses.
What was John?
John 5, 45 to 47. Jesus says, Moses wrote about me. Okay, and the only books of the Bible Moses would have been able to write are the Pentateuch, because he was dead by the time the rest of it happened. Okay? Also, remember, Moses was trained in Egypt, and he was more than capable, right? In Exodus, he says, God, I can't speak. Right? And yet his Hebrew is very complex in the Pentateuch. He is well educated. He knows what he's doing. It. Yes, exactly. Yes. His phrase about saying he couldn't speak was very eloquent. Yes. Yes. Okay. So Moses was very capable. All right. So also the Pentateuch has clear unity. It's telling one story. I mean, each book picks up right where the last book ended, right? So one author would be assumed. Okay. But do we remember the crazies and their theory of the authorship of the... Do we remember this?
Yeah. It's been like three notebooks ago.
Well, we cover it every... It's all right. It's all right.
Opened by the names of God.
That's exactly right. So we have... It's called the J-E-P-D theory. Okay? So J stands for?
Jehovah.
Okay? E stands for? Elohim. P, not a name of God anymore.
A guy.
No.
No?
This is the priestly.
Oh, right.
Okay, so these are going to be the laws. And D is, it's its own book, Deuteronomy.
So now that we've studied Leviticus, I guess the priestly one kind of confuses me because we consider Christ the high priest, the highest.
Okay, but so in this theory, okay. These two play a big role, especially in Genesis, right? Because you have Genesis 1, where he is called, I believe, Elohim, and Genesis 2, where he's called Jehovah or Yahweh. Okay, I believe I got that right. So these two really play a big role, especially in Genesis. Priestly is going to be any laws you have. Okay, so Leviticus is primarily, they think, priestly. Numbers is going to be a mix. Because there are still a lot of laws, so a lot of it's going to be priestly, but then they're going to have to try to figure out where the rest of it falls, because not all of it is laws.
Oh, I didn't realize that it was, how do you say this, like, disjointedly different all the time in that view.
Yes.
Because for some reason in my brain, I thought it was more, you know, this one is the beginning of Genesis.
No. Yes. So what they think is that you had some dude or several people who wrote all the Jehovah portions of the Pentateuch. So they wrote Genesis 1, then they wrote Genesis whatever, and then this and this and this and this and this. Okay? Pieces. Then some other guy, Elohim guy, wrote those pieces of the whole Pentateuch. Then the priestly people came along. They added in all the laws. Then someone else came and wrote Deuteronomy. And then other people came and mashed it all together to get the Pentateuch that we have today. Okay?
Remember this now. Because as an example, weren't there like several scholars who did this essay and they put their different pieces all together and then at the end they couldn't tell who?
Yes, that we talked.
They couldn't tell who their own work from the other.
Yes, very good memory. We talked about that in Genesis. So some guy, to try to disprove this, he took five current authors, took their work, mashed it all together, like this from this, you know, put it all together, gave it to them, and they couldn't even pick out their own stuff. They couldn't even pick out which pieces they had written versus what somebody else had written in a modern day document. Okay, so how in the world do we have the audacity to think that we can do tear apart scripture this way? Okay, so this is what the critical scholars believe. Okay, and one big reason they do this is because they think that the Jewish religion is far too advanced, far too developed to be that early on. Because remember, coming out of Egypt, Israel is a new, brand new nation. In Egypt, who knows what they believed and what they did. Clearly, this generation is not a great generation. Even after God shows them all the miracles, they still don't listen and obey. Okay, they're still constantly wanting to return to their idols and go back to Egypt, right? So critical scholars look at this and they say there's no way this group of people could have this advanced of a religious system. So they think that these J-E parts were written, I think, in sometime during the kings, okay? They think the priestly are post-exilic. So we're talking about, like, 400 B.C. they think these are written.
Which, how can they think they're written then? Because that law was observed for hundreds of years prior.
And some of the laws that are written were never even observed post-exilic. For example, Jubilee, right? Jubilee was actually never really observed ever. But it certainly wasn't observed post-exilic. So if you're writing it post-exilic, why would you even put it in there?
Right.
And that's one argument why it couldn't have been that late.
Yeah.
Okay. So also, this is another thing that I learned this time around. For many of this critical scholars, they don't even think Moses is real. They think, listen, this is a quote, "For many, the personality of Moses belongs to the realm of religious saga or heroic legend, created by the source authors to provide foundational credibility to the Torah." So they invented the personality of Moses because he's such a strong force, right? I mean, through Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and he's holding the nation together, right? And he's doing all these miracles, and so they think that he was just created to tie everything together. So we can see how foolish you can get. It's all right, Julie. It's all right. You can see how foolish you get when you start to doubt God's word and try to tear it apart. Okay? We'll probably go through this one more time in Deuteronomy. Okay, but this is the theory of the authorship of the Pentateuch, including Numbers. So basically they're saying we have no idea who wrote it. But we have all these different people and then some unknown editors that mashed it all together. Yes. Yes.
He's just not a real person.
Yes. Okay. I mean, and Jesus, like, even said, Moses wrote about me.
Yeah. If they, once you do from the entire scripture what you think is true and what you think isn't.
Correct. Correct. Which is what modern scholars do today.
I feel like the, you know, last part of the last chapter of Revelation is, you know, do not add and do not subtract is, you know, violated
right
here.
Yes. Yes. But it is, I mean, this is not a new thing. People always want to take what they want and not what they don't want of scripture. And so I think that's one reason why it is important to study Leviticus and Numbers, the harder books, right? Because we need to know all of it. We need to know what God says. And we don't get to ignore it because it's a little harder, you know, or we don't understand it or whatever. We need to do the put in the work to know what God says. Okay, questions? Good? So Moses wrote it about 1405, 1406, it would have been completed. Okay. Structure. Okay. This book, people are confused about this book because it's a lot of law and then a lot of stories. And so then they don't know how to tie it together. Really simply, this book is structured around two censuses. Okay. Chapter one, census of the first generation. This is the end of the old era. What happens to that first generation?
They die.
They die. So chapters 1 through 10 is them getting ready to leave Sinai, okay? Then from 10 to 25, it's basically about what? Would you guess? Wandering, but what has to happen to this generation?
Their deaths.
So it's about how they die, okay? And there's going to be laws thrown in there, okay? But the first generation, they have to die off. I mean, and in there, we're going to get them into the promised land, and then they rebel. They don't want to enter, right? And so then they have to die, and then we're going to see their rebellions and them dying off. So chapter 1, census of the first generation. Chapter 26, this is the census of the new generation, the second generation. This is going to be the generation that enters the promised land. This is one of the, if not the best generation Israel ever has. Okay, as we know, Israel constantly disobeys, right? But this generation, they are going to do things right as long as Joshua and the elders are alive. They are going to obey. Okay? Abner calls them God's masterpiece of holiness. Because we go from a generation that is anything but holy, right? And Israel is to be a nation that shows the other nations God's holiness. So he's going to take that generation, he's going to kill them off, and it's going to be their children that is God's masterpiece of holiness that's going to enter the land. Okay? So that is just the really easy, broad structure of Numbers. You have census one. Generation, you got to kill them off. Census 2, these are going to be the ones that enter the land.
Census 2 begins in
chapter 26.
Oh, okay.
And then you also, after that, you have laws, a lot of promises of how things are going to be in the land. So we're going to have throughout Numbers laws that assume that they make it into the land. Okay, because remember, in Numbers, they don't make it into the land. They send the spies in and then they don't want to go. And so God says, fine, you won't go. You're going to die in the wilderness. And then they say, just kidding, we will go. God says, fine, I'm not going with you. And they go and they get slaughtered. So, all right.
Bummer.
Yeah.
How many books are there? I mean, how many chapters?
36, I think. It's 36 or 37. Let me
okay,
just.
So I think I lost.
36. It's 36.
Chapters 26 to
36. Right, are going to just be about this new generation. It's going to be about different laws of how they for in the land. And it's going to be tribal allocations of the land. It's in Numbers that Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh want to settle Transjordan. Okay, so that's going to be all there. Okay. But it's just a big picture. I mean, this doesn't have all the details in it, but it's the broad scope of Numbers. Okay?
Well, those are the helpful things sometimes when you memorize those big outlines.
Right.
And when you're looking for something, okay, you can narrow it down.
Right.
This book and maybe this
whatever. Yep.
It's
okay, theology of Numbers. We have the character of God. Okay, first under character of God is his holiness. Okay, Israel is to display God's holiness to the nations. Okay, and we've seen this. I mean, and this is going to be a repetitive theme from Leviticus. In all areas of their lives, this is going to actually even be shown in the way they march. In the way they march, in the way they settle around the tabernacle, in the way they deal with their clean and unclean. It's all going to show the nations the holiness of God. Okay? So, God's holiness through Israel is displayed positively, you know, in what they do, how they march, etc., or negatively, which it's mostly done that way, through judgment. Okay? Israel is to be holy. They are not, so God judges them. Okay? God's holiness is so great that he goes as far as killing off an entire generation of people. Okay? To display his holiness to the world. The rest of the Bible uses the wilderness wanderings as a warning, right? God is holy. You do not obey. Remember the Israelites. They disobeyed and they wandered in the wilderness. Okay? So God will not tolerate sin, uncleanness, injustice, or rebellion because he is a holy, holy, holy God. Oh, I said God will not tolerate sin, uncleanness, injustice, or rebellion because he is a holy God. Okay, second under character of God, it's the presence of God. Remember, God is still visibly present with Israel. He's there in the Ark of the Covenant, but he's also there still in the cloud that leads them. And whenever the cloud gets up and moves, they move. And when the cloud settles down, that's where they settle. Okay, so the God is still very visibly with Israel. And so much so that the nations even know it. Numbers 14:14. Oh, I'll start in 13. God's mad. He wants to wipe out the whole nation. Okay. So Moses is pleading with God. And he says, but Moses said to the Lord, then the Egyptians will hear of it. For by your strength, you brought up this people from their midst, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, O Lord, are in the midst of this people. For you, O Lord, are seen eye to eye while your cloud stands over them. And you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and in a pillar of fire by night. Okay, so the nations even know that Israel is on the march and that their God is with them visibly. Israel is marching to war. That first census, it's for a military purpose. They're going to war and the nations know it. Right? Remember when they get to Jericho, do you remember who had heard about them? Rahab.
Yes.
Very good. The woman. Yes, Rahab says, we have heard about your God. And that's why they were afraid, right? So they had heard. The nations knew this holy God was coming after them, and they were afraid. Okay, Israel's marching to war, and the nations have heard about them and their God.
Since she puts the scarlet
yes.
off the window, so then any family that's with her, they are not
correct.
Destroyed.
Right, and then she ends up in the genealogy of Christ. Yes. Okay, third, faithfulness of God, right? And Terry talked about this earlier. And this is crazy. God will fulfill his promises to Israel regardless of what they do, right? Regardless of the fact that they rebel after God time and time and time again, okay? God will still keep his promises, and even in the midst of their rebellion, God gives them laws that assume that they're already in the land. So their getting of the promised land is so sure that God gives them laws about how to act in the promised land before they even get there, and the first generation's never going to get there, okay? But God allows the second generation in, okay? All right, land themes, okay? First, we have the wilderness, okay, which is land themes in the book of Numbers, yes, okay? First, we have the wilderness. Abner calls this the wilderness theology, okay? The wilderness becomes a refining ground for Israel. The wilderness wanderings, the purpose is to kill off the first generation and to raise up the second holy generation. Okay, the second generation, some of them might have seen God's great works, right? Because it's everybody 20 years and older has to die. So, you know, you could be 19 and you still would have experienced the Exodus and very much remembered it. Okay. But some of the second generation, they're not going to have seen everything that God had done already in Israel. But God uses the wilderness wanderings to kill off the old and to raise up the holy new. Okay. So it's a refining ground. Okay. What's interesting is Moses spent 40 years in the wilderness, right? Before. He was 40 years in Egypt. Then he was 40 years in the wilderness in Midian. Then he was 40 years in the wilderness again with Israel, right? Okay. But remember, what theme do we always talk about with the leaders of Israel? That's right. And vice versa. Whatever happens to the nation happens to them, right? Corporate solidarity. So Moses is in the wilderness 40 years because Israel's going to have to be in the wilderness 40 years. Okay. David is in the wilderness and he is refined and tested in the wilderness. Israel, when they're in exile, right? When they failed the land, God's given them the land. They disobey. God says, finally enough, they send into exile. It's like they're back in the book of Numbers. Okay, they're back in exile, and they need to be refined again. Okay, Jesus was tempted in the wilderness, right? We think, why in the world did that have to happen? Why did it have to happen? Because Israel went through it. David went through it. Moses went through it. Okay, does Israel really pass their tests in the wilderness? Not really. David doesn't pass his tests in the wilderness. Okay, the only one who actually succeeds in the wilderness is Jesus, right? But even in all the wilderness wanderings, there is always the promise, right? We talked about God's faithfulness. Even though they're wandering in the wilderness, there is still the promise of the promised land that God's going to deliver, okay? And we see through Christ that he is the one that fulfills this wilderness theology, and he is the one that can finally bring us out of our wilderness and secure our place in heaven. Okay, so it's the true king that's needed to bring us out of the wilderness. Okay, and but this kind of theology starts in the book, it's emphasized really in the book of Numbers, because this is where we get the foundation of the wandering for 40 years in the wilderness. Okay, also for under land themes is the promised land. Okay, the promised land, this is the goal of Israel in Numbers. When they set out in chapter 10, they're headed to go conquer the promised land. That's what they're supposed to go do. Okay, they go and they fail. Because the first generation rejects the land. They are afraid. They are afraid of the people in it. Even though the spies bring out great produce, right? They're afraid of the people. They don't trust God, even though God already conquered Pharaoh, right? And they didn't do anything. They just walked, right? And God drowned them all, okay? But they're afraid. They reject the land, okay? So God says, fine, you will die, and he will give the land to the next generation, okay? God has given Israel the land, which, if they had faith, should be a guarantee that they will be able to conquer the promised land. Okay? But the first generation doesn't trust God. Also, at the end of the book of Numbers, we get tribal allocations. Okay? And that means where each tribe would be and where they're going to inhabit in the promised land. Now, it's not so detailed as later on in Joshua, I think, but we also see that Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe Manasseh, they want to settle Transjordan, means across the Jordan River, which is not part of the promised land, okay? And this is going to set up for problems in the future, okay? Moses is reluctant. He doesn't want to let them do it, but he does let them do it. And it's like Israel is, even though this is their best generation, Israel is already starting to split, okay? Also, we're going to see the Levites. They don't get inheritance, but they get cities spread throughout. And we're going to see very progressive. Women are even allowed to inherit land. Okay? So to keep the land within the tribes and without losing the land, women, if there are no brothers, women are allowed to inherit as well. Okay. The people of God, we're going to see God's promises fulfilled, right? Their population has exploded. The census data, 603,000 at the census one, indicates a population of 2 to 2.5 million people. Okay, so God has fulfilled his promise to Abraham. He has multiplied his seed. Okay, obedience versus disobedience. We're going to see this, right? Israel always is given the option. Are they going to obey or disobey? Israel was to be a holy nation. But she constantly is having to choose. I mean, just like us, right? We constantly have to choose whether we're going to obey or disobey. And the first generation is a generation of perpetual disobedience. They even reject the promised land. This is the whole goal of getting out of Egypt. And they get there and then they don't even want it. Okay? So then the second generation gets the same choice. Are they going to be like their parents or are they going to choose to obey? Okay. Also, we see leadership, and we see that the rebellion spreads to the very, very top, right? Moses is God's chosen leader. He spoke to God face to face. His leadership is challenged over and over again. We see in Leviticus, you know, Aaron, Miriam challenged his leadership. In Numbers, his leadership is going to be challenged again multiple times, and God confirms Moses is the leader time and time again. And yet, Moses himself rebels against God. Okay? In our view, it might be a small thing, but God says, you did not treat me as holy. Right? And that is the paramount thing. Moses needed to keep God holy and do exactly what he said, and he didn't. And so Moses, even Moses himself, cannot enter the promised land. Okay? Otherwise, God would have probably, you know, wouldn't have been Joshua. It probably would have been Moses that helped them settle the land. And Moses might have lived another 40 years, you know, conquering the land. But he rebelled and struck the rock to get the water when God said to speak to it. So even Moses has to die in the wilderness. Okay, so Numbers really is a warning. You die in the wilderness when you reject God and disobey. Okay, the wilderness is not where we want to be. It's not a good place to be. Questions? Yes, that's finished writing, and then you can ask your question. That's okay. And disobey, yep, when you reject God and disobey.
Okay.
Yes.
Under the holiness thing, right before you went to his presence.
Yes.
There were four things, sin, rebellion, and two more.
Uncleanness and injustice.
Thank you.
Mom?
Yes.
Was there just no water or food in the land?
There was no water or food in the wilderness, but guess who provided it? Who do you think provided it? God did. God gave them manna and God gave them water when they needed it. Yep. Any other questions? All right, then we'll get started. I don't think I've ever done an introduction and actually started the book on the same day.
Well, this one is a little bit easier.
Yes, it is. Yes. Yes, exactly. All right, so Numbers. Like we've already said, so turn to Numbers 1. Numbers starts where Exodus and Leviticus end. Okay, first 10 chapters only are going to cover 20 days. Okay, Leviticus 1:1 says first of the second month. And if you go to, 10, I didn't write it down.
How many days you
said? 20. 10, 11. Says now in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th of the month. Okay. The cloud was lifted. Okay. So now they're going to start to move. So 1:1 says first day of the second month. 10:11 is the 20th of the second month. Okay, so the first 10 chapters, 9-ish chapters, are 20 days, and then the rest of the book is going to be the rest of the 40 years. Okay? So these opening 10 chapters show how the holiness principles of Leviticus are put into practice in the organization of the whole nation. Okay? So Israel is not just to be holy in what they do, as in obedience or disobedience. It's even the way they're structured, the way they are supposed to live their daily lives, is shows God's holiness. The way they march, the way they deal with their unclean, the way they camp, all of it is supposed to emphasize God's holiness. So that's what we're going to see in these first 10 chapters. Okay. Also, Israel starts out on a good note. These first 10 chapters, Israel obeys. God says, camp this way, Israel obeys. God says, take a census, Israel obeys. Okay. As soon as they get start moving again, though, then that's when they start rebelling again. Okay. So the first 10 chapters are good. Chapter 1, like we've said, is the first census, and it's for military purposes. They are marching to war. They are going to go take over the promised land. Okay? And like we've said before, the nations figure this out. They send spies, and they watch Israel, and they know that this Israel and the holy God of Israel is coming after him. And that's why we're going to get, like, Balak, who wants Balaam. Is it Balak? I think. Yeah. Balaam to curse them, right? Because they're afraid. They're afraid of this nation that is coming after them and this God that is coming after them. Okay? All right. Can someone read for me? I'm not going to make you read all the names. So, if you can read Numbers 1 through 4, and then 16 through 19. 1 through 4, 16 through 19. I won't make you read all the names of the men.
Whoever is able to go out to war in Israel, you and Aaron shall number them by their armies. With you, moreover, there shall be a man of each tribe, each one head of his father's household.
16 through 19.
These are they who were called of the congregation, the leaders of their father's tribes. They were the heads of division of Israel. So Moses and Aaron took these men who had been designated by name, and they assembled all the congregation together on the first of the second month. Then they registered an ancestry in their families by their father's households according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, head by head, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. So he numbered them in the wilderness of Sinai.
Okay, so verse 1, then the Lord spoke. Okay, so this starts with direct revelation from God, right? And we've seen this all throughout Leviticus. Same thing. Then the Lord spoke to Moses. Okay, this phrase is in Numbers 50 times. Okay, and God has been speaking since Genesis 1, right? God speaks light, speaks creation into existence, and he also speaks to Adam, speaks revelation. This is the only way we can know about God, is direct revelation from him. Other gods do not and cannot speak the way God does.
Is it in Numbers 50 times?
Yes. This phrase is in Numbers 50 times.
50?
50, 50. Then the Lord spoke, specifically to Moses, yes. Okay? So this is God's chosen method of revelation, so Numbers continues the revelation of God. Okay, they are in the wilderness of Sinai, so we're right where we left them in Exodus and Leviticus. They haven't moved. It's only been a month since Exodus. Okay, he speaks to him in the tent of meeting. That's the tabernacle. And this is where God has chosen to speak to Moses. Okay. It's the first of the second month in the second year. This is about 11 months after Moses first went up Sinai. And that's the reference for that is Exodus 19:1. Okay. He goes up in the third month, I believe, on some day. I can't remember. But Exodus 19:1, he goes up to Sinai for the first time. And now we're about 11 months later. So when they set out 20 days later, it's almost, they've been at Sinai almost a year. Okay? Verses 2 to 4, God, what does God say to Moses? He tells him to take a census. Okay? If you remember back in Exodus 30, 12 through 15, God tells them how to take a census, and they were to collect a half shekel per man. Do we remember this?
No, where was that?
Exodus, we can read it. Exodus 30, 12 through 15. I'll read it really quick. Exodus 30, 12 through 15. Says, when you take a census of the sons of Israel to number them, then each one of them shall give a ransom for himself to the Lord when you number them, so that there will be no plague among them when you number them. This is what everyone who is numbered shall give, half a shekel according to the shekel of the sanctuary. The shekel is 20 gerahs, half a shekel as a contribution to the Lord. Everyone who is numbered from 20 years old and over shall give the contribution to the Lord. The rich shall not pay more, and the poor shall not pay less than the half shekel, when you give the contribution to the Lord to make atonement for yourselves. Okay?
No.
Yes.
The first, like, verses, the ones we didn't read.
Yes.
That's not the actual census yet.
No, that's just how to take a census.
Okay, and then they were, isn't it, was it, did it say God actually chose, like, the head, was he God choosing a head for each tribe? Is that what
In Numbers,
in the early part, verses 5 through 15.
Let me look, sorry.
It says, then these are the names of the men who shall stand with you.
Oh, yes, in Numbers.
Right,
Yes. Those are, I don't know if God is choosing them. Those are the leaders of the tribes. Maybe God is choosing them there. But those are the leaders of the tribe that are to help with the census. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So he's.
God's choosing a leader for
yep. 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 Yep.
My notage for 5 through 15 says the names of the leaders of the 12 tribes are yep. listed
yep.
by their lineage. Does that help?
No, well, that doesn't say if God chose them or not.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of does seem, I mean, he's specifically telling them who is to stand with him.
Right, because God's telling them who's right. to stand. It may not be the most popular guy in the tribe.
Right, but these are the leaders of the tribes because they're repeated over and over in the book of Numbers, these specific men. Okay, so first though, they're to take the census. Right? And verse 3, from 20 years old and upward. Notice that there's no upper limit. Right? It doesn't say 20 to 60, and after 60, you don't have to fight anymore. Right? Moses served God till he was 120. So you didn't get out of it if you were old. That's right. Okay? So Israel was being organized to invade the promised land. So, I mean, in verse 3 says that whoever is able to go out to war in Israel, you and Aaron shall number. Okay, and then verse 4 says they get a person from each tribe. So each man listed in verse 5 through 16 is a representative or spokesman in charge of making the counting of their tribe accomplished. Make sure that it was accomplished. Okay, these are the leaders of their respective tribe. And these same names appear in chapter 2. Verse 3 to 31, when it's talking about the arrangement of the tribes around the tabernacle, how they're supposed to camp. Okay, these leaders are supposed to make sure that their tribe camps in the right spot. Chapter 7, verses 12 to 83, this is when each tribe brings the exact same offering to the tabernacle. Okay, but who brings it for each tribe? It's these men. And then also chapter 10, verse 14 to 27, when they actually finally march out, these are the guides leading their tribes.
What was the last chapter?
10, 14 to 27. Okay. Only two names in this list are actually familiar to us that we find elsewhere. Okay, the first one is verse 7. It says, of Judah, Nashon, the son of Amminadab. Okay. This is going to be in the line of Boaz, David, and Christ. So if we go to Ruth, which should be no shocker, right? Because it's Judah. Can someone read for me verse Ruth 4, 18 to 22?
Now these are the generations of Perez. To Perez was born Hezron. To Hezron was born Ram. To Ram Amminadab. To Amminadab was born Nahshon. And to Nahshon Salmon. And to Salmon was born Boaz. And Boaz Obed. And to Obed was born Jesse. And to Jesse David.
Okay, so here in Numbers we have Nahshon, who is the son of Amminadab, is the leader of the tribe of Judah. Okay. So he, Nahshon, is the grandfather of Boaz. And Boaz is the great-grandfather of David. Okay? So that's one. The second name that should be familiar to us is Ephraim. And that is in verse 10. It says, of the sons of Joseph, of Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Ammihud. And if we go to 1 Chronicles, we see who he's the grandpa of. What? Verse 10, that's okay. Ephraim, of the sons of Joseph. Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Ammihud. Okay. 1 Chronicles 7. Can someone read for me 26 and 27? 1 Chronicles 7, 26 and 27. Okay, so we're dealing with Elishama, the son of Ammihud, right? So Elishama is Joshua's grandpa. Elishama is the father of Nun, who is the father of Joshua. Okay, so these are the two names, Judah and Ephraim, those leaders we find out more about later on in scripture. But Elishama is the grandfather of Joshua. And Nahshon is the grandfather of Boaz, who is the great-grandfather of David. Okay. 17 through 19. So it says, Moses and Aaron took these men who had been designated by name, and they assembled all the congregation together on the first of the second month. Then they take their census. 19. Just as the Lord had commanded Moses, so he numbered them in the wilderness of Sinai. Okay, so they obey. Moses obeys, the leaders obey, and they count all the males who could fight. Okay, so this census is going to show how Israel has truly multiplied. All right. Then the next section is 20 through 46, but we're not going to read it because it is all the same except for the name of the tribe changes and the number changes. Otherwise, all the rest of it's the same. So I'm going to write it down for you. So you might have this list in your Bible. Okay. So there they are by tribe. This is what's in the verses 20 to 46. The tribe and how many people there are.
And you, this is just adult male 20 and over.
Yes, this is just fighting men. Okay? So what do you notice?
Because I noticed it this morning. I counted them up.
Yes.
And Levi's missing.
Okay, Levi is missing. Okay, we get 12 because who are these guys?
Joseph.
Okay, but remember, Joseph kind of splits into two tribes. So no Levites, okay, are here. What else do we notice? Which tribe dominates? Like, not even close, right? I mean, Dan is closest. And even if you combine Ephraim and Manasseh, they're still less than Judah. Okay, why would Judah dominate? Because it's the lion. Because he's the chosen one, right? Remember, from Genesis 3:15, we are always looking for who? The seed. We are always looking for the seed. Where is the line of the seed going to be? Right? End of Genesis tells us that the seed is going to come through Judah. Okay? So, Judah dominates. Now, we won't talk about this in detail until chapter 26. But, if you can keep in mind right now, we're going to notice something about Judah, something specific about Simeon, and something specific about Manasseh. Those tribes are going to be the three important ones when we look at the second census. Okay? Judah, Simeon, and Manasseh. Okay?
My Bible has the second census.
Yes. Yeah.
Judah doesn't really decrease. Well, no. Judah increases.
Yeah. Judah is going to still be dominant. Yes. Because Judah's the line of Christ. Okay. Now, this total, 603,550, this ties to Exodus 38:26 when they do their census in Exodus. I kind of wonder if it's the same census. Because if it's not the same census, then it's like two censuses within like a month. Okay. But the number is the same. Exodus 38, verse 26, when they count the men, it's this exact same number, 603,550. And that's when they're collecting the half shekel. So I kind of wonder if they're the same census. They had to pay it for the tabernacle, to raise money for the tabernacle. Yep. Okay, the Levites are excluded because the Levites don't fight. Okay, what's the Levites' job? Priests and take care of the tabernacle or the temple. Okay? So they're not listed, and we're going to talk about them in the next section. That's who's next. Okay? This is going to be the first generation that all has to die off, all these men. Okay? Because this is 20 years old and older, right? So now they're going to march and go to the promised land, and they're going to say, oh, just kidding, we don't want to go in. So God's going to say, everyone 20 years old and older has to die. So that's these guys. And I would presume the wife as well, but it's specifically about the men.
So I think that's amazing that Judas never still went up. They basically replaced all that.
Yes.
In this and then added more.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Okay. Now, when I was studying, I ran into a problem that I don't have a super good solution for. So all the scholars think that this number is way too big. Okay. They think that to have this many fighting men, right, means a population of 2 to 2.5 million, right? Because you have to have the women and the children and the everyone. Okay, also, there's another problem because if you go to Numbers 3, verse 43, Numbers 3, verse 43. It says, and all the firstborn males by the number of names from a month old and upward for their numbered men were 22,273. Okay? So what God is doing is he's saying, if you remember in Exodus, right? God kills off all the firstborn Egyptian males, right? And God says, all the firstborn Israel, all the firstborn Israelites are mine. But now in Numbers, he said, instead of taking each of your firstborns and making them serve at the tabernacle, I'm going to take the Levites. So the Levites are the replacement for your firstborns. Okay, make sense? So that's what's going on here. So they had to count all their firstborns. Well, if you have only 22,273 firstborns, right? That means each woman, if you do the math, if you take this number divided by 22,000, that's there's 27 males for every one firstborn. Okay? Theoretically, right? If you're thinking, that means every woman had to have like 27 kids. Plus then they're also going to have girls. Okay? Now, there's a couple of solutions to this. Okay? But just based on the numbers within Numbers itself, that seems like we have a little bit of some problem. Either the firstborns, something's going on there and we're not really counting all of them, or this number's too big. Okay? They also think this number is too big because they think that this number, if you really had this many fighting men, you should have been able to go into Canaan and just decimated it. Like back then, this large of an army would have been ginormous and should have just been able to take over. Okay? So, a couple of solutions. I think unless we have very good reason to, because then they go into all these theories, these numbers are multiplied by a factor of 10 or 100. These numbers are, one guy said that the word for thousand, right, so 62,700, that can also be translated clan or family. So he thinks that maybe it's 62 families with 700 men. Do you see? Or 53 families with 400 men, right? Something like that. Which, 32,000 families with 200 men when you have 30, anyways, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense either, okay? But they're trying, and then they say 2 million people wandering in the wilderness, how could you support that, all the logistics and the bathrooms and all this? And it's like, well, if God can provide the quail and the man on the water, I'm pretty sure he can take care of 2 million people in the wilderness like that. I don't think that's going to be a problem. Okay. No. Right. So I think it's best to take God's word as it is, unless we have strong internal evidence that it should be interpreted a different way. You know,
Did they still do the concubines like Abraham?
Yes. So they talked about that too. So with the firstborns, there's a couple of ideas. One is that maybe this 22,000 firstborns are only the firstborns that have been born since they left Egypt. Okay, so it's like the new firstborns, not counting all the old ones. Okay, another idea is maybe it's for example, Reuben, right, is Jacob's firstborn, right? But he's Leah's firstborn. Rachel's firstborn is Joseph. Right, but then we wouldn't count Joseph because Reuben is the firstborn of the whole family. So even though it's a different woman, like you said, with concubines, so then you could have more kids in a family. Or it could be the firstborn of the clan, just counting like, you know, of the firstborn, who's their firstborn, and only that firstborn counts, not the firstborn of the secondborn. Does that make sense too? Okay. So, I mean, just an idea of, I'm not saying that this is how it is, right? But just different ideas of why the firstborn number is so much smaller when compared to this number, the 603,000 number, okay? So I don't have an exact answer for you. I don't know exactly how it works. But also with fighting to take over Canaan, in Deuteronomy 20 verses 5 through 8, says, we're going to go to war, but here are all the exceptions of how you don't have to go to war, okay? One of them was if you were afraid to fight, you didn't have to fight, okay? One of them is if you have a new wife. One of them is if you just built a house or planted a field or whatever. There were all these exceptions. And if you remember when Gideon, right, gathers his army, God takes it from whatever thousands down to 300, right? Because they're all sent away for different reasons, okay? So you could have this quote-unquote large of an army, But then when you actually went out to fight, your fighting forces is going to be a way smaller because of a whole bunch of different reasons. Okay? So, did I confuse everyone? I know. I ran into this problem. I'm like, oh my goodness. Oh man. But just know there are critics out there that think this number is too big. Okay? But I do think it's best that we just take God's word at what it says. And really, it didn't matter how big Israel's army was, right? Because if God said they were going to lose, they were going to lose, right? Didn't matter how big they were. If God says they were going to win, right? Isn't it Jonathan and his like armor bearer take on like the entire Philistine army? Like they're two guys. Right, exactly. So the number really doesn't matter because if God is with them, God does their fighting. And if God does not with them, they get their tails kicked. Right? Because they're not going to win without God. Okay? All right. Questions?
603,000, that really isn't that many.
Yes.
When you're going into battle, you might not take all of them.
Right. Right. In our way of thinking, but the armies back then and the kingdoms back then were a lot smaller than they are today. So, but yes, you're right. It's still 2 million people is not huge, huge. Yes.
When you were in Exodus,
yes.
Didn't we say that their numbers had already reached like close to a million at that point?
No, they were about this size coming out of Egypt. Right. Yep.
So then this number shouldn't be a problem.
Theoretically, but we got to make a problem out of everything. All right. Let's try to finish. 47. Can someone read 47 to 54? Please.
But the Levites were not registered with them by their ancestral tribe. For the Lord had told Moses, "Do not register or take a census of the tribe of Levi with the other Israelites. Appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony, all of its furnishings and everything in it. They are to transport the tabernacle and all of its articles, take care of it, and camp around it. Whenever the tabernacle is to move, the Levites are to take it down. And whenever it is to stop at a campsite, the Levites are to set it up. Any unauthorized person who comes near it must be put to death. Does God smite them, or do they have to smite them?"
Probably they're supposed to smite them.
"The Israelites are to camp by their military divisions, each man with his encampment and under his banner. The Levites are to camp around the tabernacle of testimony and watch over it, so that no wrath will fall on the Israelite community. The Israelites did everything just as the Lord had commanded Moses."
Okay, so this section tells us why the Levites are not counted. Okay? So their job is to tend a tabernacle and to serve God, not to fight in wars. Okay? And so verse 50, it says, "But you shall appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony." Okay, reminder, the testimony is the Ten Commandments that are kept in the ark. It's the basis of Israelites' law and their covenant with God. Okay? Then, verse 50 and 51 lay out the Levites' general responsibilities, right? We are going to get more into which part of the Levites did what, right, in chapters 3 and 4. Okay? But in verse 50, the first thing they're supposed to do is they're to carry it. Middle of the verse, "They shall carry the tabernacle and all its furnishings." Okay, so when it was being transported, it was the Levites that were the ones to carry it. And remember, all priests are Levites, but not all Levites are priests. The majority of the Levites are not priests. Okay, so when we're talking about the Levites, this is Levites in general, probably not even including the priests. Okay, so it was to be the Levites that were to carry the furnishings. Now we're going to find out later the priests had to wrap them all up, right? And then the Levites carried them. But the Levites were the ones to carry it. Okay? Verse 50 again, "And they shall take care of it." Okay? So they were to keep and guard the furnishings. They were their responsibility that nothing happened to it while it was being transported. "They shall also camp around the tabernacle." Okay, chapter 2, we're going to find out how everyone else camped around the tabernacle. But the tabernacle is going to be in the middle. And then the Levites, their camp is all the way around it, encircling it, protecting it, so that it does not get defiled. Okay, verse 51. So when the tabernacle is to set out, the Levites take it down. Okay, so they dismantle the tabernacle. And then also when they arrive, the tabernacle encamps, the Levites set it up. Okay, so they are everything tabernacle is their responsibility. Okay, they carry it, they take care of it, they camp around it, they take it down, they set it up. And yes, go ahead.
And they head out, like, they're not first. They, you know, the Levites are first? No.
Because I don't remember.
They're in the middle to help protect.
Yes, I think Judah actually leads them. Yes. No. No. No, they don't. No, they when they march, they don't leave out, but lead out. But the Levites are going to be the ones that dismantle,
yeah,
make sure everything's right, you know, taken right care of. And then when they set it up again, then their camp is surrounding the tabernacle. Then in chapter 2, we're going to have where all the other tribes are, and everyone surrounds it. But the Levites are like the protecting guard around the tabernacle. Okay? And it, oh, go ahead.
They're in the middle. Yes.
Right, right, right. Yep. So anyone who approaches the tabernacle or the furnishings that was not a Levite would defile it, right? So this is punishable by death, right? So the assumption is when the tabernacle is moving or being set up, right, your Joe Schmo is not allowed near. Now, obviously, they're allowed in to offer their sacrifices. Okay, but they're not to be messing around with the furniture or the poles or the curtains or any of it. Okay, that is the job of the Levites. The average person, they don't come near it, they don't touch it. Okay. Verse 52, the sons of Israel shall camp, each man by his own camp and each man by his own standard according to their armies. I think Marion's version said banners. So a standard was probably some sort of flag, banner, something that had the symbol of the tribe on it. It was at least identifiable as belonging to that tribe. Okay, verse 53 again, but the Levites shall camp around the tabernacle. So it's very important. God says it twice. Okay, so that the Israelites would not defile the tabernacle. Verse 54, thus the sons of Israel did according to all which the Lord had commanded Moses, so they did. Okay, so again, Israel starts off great in the book of Numbers. They obey. They conduct the census properly, and they're going to keep obeying as God tells them how to camp and how to march. Okay, but again, once they're on the move, they are characterized by rebelliousness. Okay, but they at least end the first part of Numbers doing a good job.